Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature. No matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm delighted you could join me today. We're approaching the new year, 2023, as I record this, and many of us will be considering the challenges ahead and how we can overcome them. Well, no matter the challenge, I believe we can all pull through, and my guest today has done just that after facing one of the biggest challenges any of us would be unfortunate enough to face, and that is a stroke or two, to be precise. David Hines was highly successful, living the high life thanks to his stress management consultancy business, until he suffered the two strokes. And at that point, he lost everything. But he was determined to get his life back. Today, he's an award-winning screenwriter and a successful author who's written two books, one on how to come back from suffering a stroke, called, appropriately enough, After Stroke, and another called Beat Depression, now depression being common amongst stroke survivors. I met David recently over Zoom to talk about his experiences and his books. David, I really enjoyed isn't the right word, but really appreciate this book because it's written from a survivor's perspective, obviously, but also in a way that anybody can understand and follow all the things that are required to recover from a stroke, no matter how bad or how minor the stroke was. And I think that's an incredible feat for you, because I think when you first wrote it, this is the edition that's out now, is a revised edition. When you first wrote it, you were actually in recovery from a stroke, weren't you?
Yes, I'd had two strokes. The first was bad enough, but the second one took out an entire artery in my neck. It was very serious. It took me a few years to fully recover, but in the early days, you know, in hospital, I would just stare up at the ceiling, you know, and it was not good at all. But eventually, because I'm quite a determined person, you know, I was used to a good life. I'd had a good life, and I intended to have a good life. And staring up at the ceiling in the hospital was not good. So I realized I had to get better. So jumping forward, when I wrote the book, I had to make it easy for people. You have to, because they can't, when you're that ill, you can't comprehend much. So I wanted to give my readers something every day, just one thing, because I remember the first time I tried to read after a stroke was a paper in the hospital. I could focus on the words, but the words didn't mean anything. But the first word, I distinctly remember the first word I mastered. There was a word, what does that mean? And then eventually, after thinking for a few minutes, mother, I got one of them, a rather good one. So you've got to persevere. So that's where it was my starting point. So making it easy. And I'm very proud of that, because so many books I've read on the subject at the time were confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was back in 2020 that your first edition of the book came out, wasn't it?
Correct. That's the first edition of After Stroke, published by Thorsons in this country, and then the next year by HarperCollins in America, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And how long had it been since your bad stroke?
I had them both one weekend. It was a lovely, warm, hot weekend in August. And on a Saturday, not a good day to have a stroke, by the way. You don't want to take me into hospital over the weekend, I can assure you.
Oh, dear.
So I had this one, which was later referred to by my consultant as a mild one. But mild, I mean, my face was like that. And, you know, my body was, you call that mild? He did. But compared with the next one, on the Monday in hospital, oh, leave it out. So it was in 1995. I was probably not the ideal patient because I was absolutely determined, you know, to get well. I couldn't stay like that. I suppose I'm a vain person. You know, when half your your mouth is this way and twisted and half your body doesn't work and the other half does. You can't stay like that. If you've survived the stroke, then, you know, get well, get better. I was vicious with myself. I was lying in hospital in those early days. Before I would go off to sleep, I would force my foot, because you had a drooping foot that would go behind, pathetic. So I would kick it into shape. I mean, kick it, put it as it should be before going to sleep. And things like this are helpful. It's helpful.
Yeah.
Your body's got to know who's boss and what it's going to do. And it's a long, hard struggle, but it's worth it. I have a lovely life, you know, these days. So it has to be worth it.
Well, you're definitely evidence that you can recover from a stroke and live a wonderful life, because I think you say in your book that you're happier now than you've ever been in many respects.
I mean, you know, I've done some wonderful things and, you know, I've achieved quite a lot. You know, I've made lots of money at one stage before the strokes. I started with just my own stress management consultancy from home. It was a really lovely way of earning money, you know, helping others to improve the quality of their lives. It gave me great pleasure. I ended up with 92 consultancies. Obviously, it made me a lot of money, so I was a millionaire. But then the strokes came, and I probably deserved my strokes, because in those days, I was between marriages, so I would eat out. I mean, I had a lovely home, lovely kitchen, but I may have used it. But eat out, eat rich foods, drink too much. In those days, I smoked. You know, so I wasn't, it wasn't a very healthy life. It was a great one. But there we go. But these days, it's a completely different type of happiness. I have a lovely wife who I met as a result of the stroke. Actually, you know, it's really quite amazing. Years after the stroke, just before stroke came out, I met someone in the street. I was walking down in Museum Street in London. There was someone who looked a bit confused, a lovely young lady. I said, "What are you looking for?" She was looking for the British Museum. I said, "That great big building over there."
Yes, it's not hard to find.
she was confused. Anyway, we got talking. You know, I didn't know, because this was four or five years after I'd had a stroke. She could tell I'd had a stroke because her father died of his second stroke.
Oh, gosh.
And she was very fond of her father. It was a big, big thing. But she knew, she could tell. But, you know, we got together and we've been happily married now for 21 years. Yeah.
Fantastic. That's a lovely, lovely story. And just proves that people can recover from stroke. Now, in your book, you go through all the stages, and you will have gone through these stages of, well, first of all, the shock, realizing that your body's gone into, you know, this place which is completely confusing to you. And then, you know, you go through all the other stages, like denial, anger, guilt, and how you can get through all of these stages. And I love the way you lay it out, as in bite-sized chunks. You don't want to be left wondering what on earth anybody means by anything. You beautifully outline all the different stages, and then very simply what to do to get over this.
Well, thank you for that. Yes, it is true. And it's so important, because we're talking about getting your life back. Getting your life, I mean, this is so important. So I wouldn't want anyone to miss a trick, shall we say. So you've got to make it very straightforward. But even things like anger, you know, guilt, you can use these to speed your recovery. You really can. So it's worth putting them in bite-sized chunks, because I mean, different people are in different stages of recovery, and also for carers, for loved ones, this has come as a shock to them. I'm very proud of After Stroke and the book I wrote afterwards, Beat Depression, because sadly 50% of people that have a stroke do get depressed, and strangely enough, when they begin to get better, that is one of my strong points. I think it's because my background is stress management, problems with the subconscious mind. So you've got to do things one at a time, gradually, because say you're bringing someone, I mean, I will never forget her. She was a very brave young lady in my stress management days. She had been, so her husband thought, murdered. He kicked and beat her to death and left her, you know, to die. She didn't quite die, not quite. Milton Keynes Hospital had to work really hard in the casualty department. But nevertheless, of course, her mind is troubled as well now, right from the medical side. But a caring friend brought her into my stress management consultancy. She had a great big thing sticking out of her leg and awful. And she wouldn't speak. She wouldn't even speak to me, but I spoke to the friend, and I said, eventually, to cut a long story short, I had to get her back from hell to, you know, back to the land of the living, in terms of, from a mental point of view. And you have got to go slowly. You've got to go slowly through, because if you're going to run out of trauma, which is the most difficult part of therapy, you can't afford to make a mistake. You've got to be prepared for it. And the same with recovering from stroke. You've got to do it one stage at a time, so you don't trip over, so you get it right. So nice, easy chunks is the way to do anything, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, certainly your background comes through in the book. You can see that you have an understanding, or had an understanding, and that helped you through. And now, wonderfully, you're helping other people get through it. And I was going to talk about carers, because that's a section of the book that you don't shy away from, talking about the burden that might be on a carer, who comes forward, who, you know, what is good care and what isn't good care. You go into all of that without sugarcoating anything, which, again, I think is a really great service to people who are going through this.
Yes, I'm going to tell you something that I shouldn't do now. You sort of teased it out of me. That's naughty of you.
I didn't say a word.
Well, I know, but you brought back something. I have a favourite niece, and I'm her favourite uncle. And, you know, she had a difficult time when she was younger, and I was perhaps, you know, a little bit kind and helpful to her. And when I was ill in a hospital, she insisted that I be shipped down to her home in Pulpero, a little village in Cornwall. Well, there's not much I could do about it. I thought, well, this is going to be awful, but it's even more awful than this hospital. I thought, well, there we go. So I went. Now, we can laugh about it now. But as well as introducing me to other people as favorite uncle, I'm also introduced as the guest from hell. Because could you imagine me having had a stroke, not very, you know, amenable, completely upsetting their lifestyle? I mean, she had three kids and she just left her husband. And it was, you know, it was chaos there. But we all go through it and we all laugh about it. But it's very important. I mean, it's going to make a big difference to any carer. So, you know, if you love someone, then of course it's much easier. But nevertheless, it's going to be difficult. So sense of humour is helpful.
Yes, and some endurance as well is helpful. And you also talk about how sometimes the tendency is to overhelp. In other words, you know, finish sentences when somebody's trying to get a word, or help people move when actually they need to get there on their own.
Now, you've hit on a very important point here. Very important. I'm afraid the stroke patient has got to. They might not want to, but they have got to do as much for themselves as they possibly can. And they have to be encouraged to, if necessary, made to, by their loved one, by their carer. You know, there can be too much caring, because surely the goal has got to be to get yourself back 100% if you possibly can. Not possible for everybody. But you're already on the winning side. If you haven't died, well, you're in there with a chance, aren't you? But yes, love and care, absolutely wonderful. But you've got to do as much as you can.
Yeah. And you're talking there about a reframe as well, because a lot of stroke sufferers, or I mean, you actually use the word victims as well, but you say don't use that in a negative sense. And a lot of your book is about reframing where you are. So you are a survivor, you're a winner. Because you're,
well, of course you are. If you're alive, because yeah, an awful lot of people die.
Yeah.
I mean, in this country, more than 100, I'm going to the statistic, but, you know, a lot of people die. So if you come through the other end, you're on the winning side.
Yeah, there's no denying that. Well, we have to take a short break now, but we'll be back with more from David Hines right after these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, David Hines, whose determination and lack of a poor me mentality has seen him recover from his two strokes so well. He's not only an author, but he's written a screenplay as well.
Oh, I have so much fun with this. And it will be a film. It will be. It's hard work. It will be. Oh, I had so much fun with this. But let's not even go there. We can have 10 programs on this one. you're hitting home on some important points. I can tell you've really read this book. I mean, you really have.
I tried to do my research.
Yes, I can tell.
One of the things that comes really screaming out of the pages for me is this: don't lie back and just, you know, accept that you've lost whatever function in your body that you might have lost. But by the same token, don't expect to be better within a couple of weeks. It's not going to happen. And again, that's what I love about your keeping to realistic steps, realistic achievements throughout the whole process of recovery. But you, at the same time, say it can be done. You can do it. You are a winner. You're already a survivor. You're already doing well. But it's that overarching, I think, upbeat message in your book, which I think is so helpful as well, because it's very easy to fall into the, oh, you'll never do this or you'll never do that again, isn't it? And then look at you.
It is. Some people don't try. They think stroke, okay, wheelchair, all the rest, and that sort of thing. In fairness to them, perhaps they haven't had the encouragement. Perhaps they don't have the confidence. Perhaps they don't dare to dream. But you don't know until you try. And there's also this sort of fear of failure. I mean, I've failed at many things in my life, but I've succeeded in quite a few. I'm not afraid of failure. So, okay, you've had a stroke. It's not necessarily your fault. I mean, you know, if you were a smoker, or if you are a smoker, a heavy drinker, well, you have contributed. But there are situations where, whether it's your fault or not, best thing is to get better. Okay, so you've had it. Surely it's worth trying. And it's very important to try right from the beginning, because it's easy to make progress in the very, very early stages. But you can go on improving. In my experience, I got better and better over a 5-year period. Now, I still need, there is one part that I can't overcome. I still need, little confession, I have an afternoon nap, my siesta. Why shouldn't I? I used to go to Spain. I had a business in Spain once, so they have siestas over there. So why can't I now, as a two-stroker? That, I find, is necessary, because otherwise my brain gets a bit tired, and my body and that sort of thing. So I have a little nap for an hour or two in the afternoon, and I find that very, very helpful.
Well, I think it's perfectly acceptable. And let's just remind ourselves that, you know, you're at an age when most people who haven't had a stroke might want to have a siesta in the afternoon.
Yes, I've made it to 77 and very happy, very healthy, actually. So, yeah, you've got to, some people, perhaps it never occurs to them that they can recover.
Yes.
You know, so hopefully someone will, you know, mention my book. This is why I'm, you know, delighted that you're discussing my book, because we need to get it in the hands of as many people and as many carers.
Yes.
I mean, I've come across a wonderful nurse and a doctor. They give a copy of my book to every stroke patient that they have, because they know it's good. They know it's good for them. But not everybody has this opportunity. Some people, I guess, in a wheelchair, never occur to them that they can recover. They need the push, but you've got to push yourself as well. But it's helpful if you've got somebody else caring who will help you. But you don't want to stay in your wheelchair or stay in it. Try it, even if you fail. Come on, yeah. It's quite fun, you know. I mean, it's got to be worth it. You're getting your life back. You want a full life. My life is very, very different from the lives I've had before.
Well, I was going to come to that as well. Your life is very different now, and you say that it's far better now. You're a better person now, and almost the stroke was a wake-up call to you.
In a way, yes. Okay, I had a lot of success. Rich people tend to become perhaps arrogant and this sort of thing. So it's perhaps I became a bit arrogant or something. You're used to getting anything you want because you can afford it. Yeah, it's very nice, I can assure you. Don't knock it. But I had actually given up smoking 6 months before I had the stroke. It sort of occurred to me that, you know, it's been not good. But, yeah, I would never have married my wife because, or she wouldn't have married me, should we say, because in those days, I would decide everything I wanted. Whereas now it's an equal sort of situation. Mm. I suppose, okay, so I'm not as arrogant as I was. You know, when you get rich, you get what you want and you're accustomed to it and you expect it. Okay, well, my wife will do battle, we'll have mud fights if necessary. It's great fun. But, and she's a very, you know, forceful person as well. She's a hard-working mathematics teacher, you know, in Cornwall. Not easy teaching in schools these days. It really isn't. But I'm very happy. You know, I'm so glad that I went to the trouble of rewriting, updating these books. I had the help of a wonderful man, a neighbour actually, a doctor, Dr. Wei Fong Lim, and he's a consultant at a local hospital here in Plymouth. He's brilliant. So, and he's got latest technologies that he knows about and I don't, so that's it in the book as well. Life is different, but the screenplay got two titles, Taser and it's The Happiness Angel. I haven't decided on which one. He's won 22 awards. I mean, wife and I went to Paris. Now, we were nominated for the Palmers. And, okay, so it's not quite as good as the BAFTAs, but nevertheless, it's pretty good.
Any award?
I was up against, it was five nominations, myself for The Happiness Angel. There were two Americans and two French. And remember, this is France. Now, very like us British. You know, we left the EU and all that. and they certainly like the Americans more than they like us. So I thought, well, I'm not actually going to win, but my wife wanted to go to Paris. You know, she knows they got some shops there. so... We won, would you believe? We won. And, you know, everybody was so supportive. It was amazing. So we had a really great time. How did we digress onto this?
It's a lovely story. You're having all this success and a wonderful life that is very different to your previous life, but you've made it happen and you are now enjoying yourself at the age of 77. I think it's fantastic. And your book is a real testament to how you've done that and how you can win through. One of the results, I guess you could say, of you having a stroke is that you were depressed afterwards. And this is quite common after stroke, as I understand it. And so that led you, because you've had depression in the past as well, when you were a teenager, this led you to write a book called Beat Depression. And the first point you make, which I think is brilliant in the book, is that you are not alone if you are depressed. 300 million people affected globally. Wow, that's a lot.
I'm afraid it is. And I regret to say that with the state of the world at the moment, I suspect, certainly in the Western world, that over the next 3 years, there's going to be more cases, not less, because people are going to be financially worried, quite apart from all the other worries as well.
Yeah, it's one of the most comprehensive books that I have come across on depression, because a lot of books talk about clinical depression or they talk about therapy, but you actually go into all the issues surrounding depression, the why me, the states of depression, recovery, everything that you could possibly think of that relates to this condition. Or is it a disease?
No, I don't think it's a disease. It's a condition. It's a state of mind.
Yeah.
And anyone, so there is no shame in this. Anyone could be depressed. Billionaires, believe it or not, millionaires get depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people with wonderful lifestyles. Now, in those days, I was a millionaire when my stress management business, by the time I got 92 consultancies in the 1980s and 90s. But then in the 90s, obviously, I had the strokes, which completely different lifestyle, from a great lifestyle to being in a hospital bed and sort of staring up at the ceiling. So anyway, dealt with all of that, got better, as you can see.
Absolutely.
Because I was very determined to get better. It took years, but there we go. But strangely enough, I mean, who would have guessed it? So I got myself, I'm no longer paralyzed. I can talk. I got myself sort of back to normal. And then I became depressed, which you would have thought me, a stress manager consultant, how can this happen to me? It's almost insulting. But in actual fact, a very high proportion of people that survive strokes get depressed. It's as high as 50%.
Wow, that's a lot, yeah.
Because you're used to one lifestyle, and now, unless you get completely better, you've got a different one. And in my case, even though I got completely better, I have a different lifestyle, which I love now, but I didn't like it necessarily then. I remember the breakthrough, because to answer your question, why is it starting You're Not Alone? One of the nicest things people say about the book, that they feel that I'm sort of holding their hand, as it were, while taking them through. And that's nice, because I've been there, done it, and come out the other end. And everybody can, unless, sadly, they commit suicide and succeed, which is very, very sad, because there's no way back from that I'm aware of. But to start with, you really need encouragement, assistance to get into the right frame of mind to help yourself. Because if you are severely depressed, clinically depressed, you're stuck in a sort of unhealthy mind frame. It's very difficult to get yourself out. The key, I was very depressed. I forced myself to watch video after video after video of my favorite things. You won't like probably my choice, very out of date now and unfashionable, 40 Towers, John Cleese.
Oh, no.
I was brought up on that as a child. And it really, some of those episodes made me laugh. Now, when you're depressed, you can't laugh. If you're really depressed, you can't laugh. And I forced myself, I got the whole Flaming Connection. I sat there as miserable as hell. But you know what? After the seventh or eighth episode, I actually began to sort of just a little tiny laugh. And that's the beginning of the end for depression.
Wow. And they say laughter is the best medicine, don't they?
Absolutely. Because laughter and depression, they can't share the same bed. Can't do it. You have one or the other.
I think it really is so hard for anyone in a depression to get themselves out of it. But we'll have more on that in a moment. Right now it's time for another break to hear this from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101, and we're back with more from David Hines, the stroke survivor and author of two books, After Stroke and Beat Depression. I put it to him that it's very difficult for anyone who's depressed to motivate themselves to do anything.
That's why the book starts out very gently. It's very easy to follow language. And you start off by just entering a few ticks in the actual book. Because this is a book to use, not just to read. And if you work your way through from beginning to end, there will be strategies that suit you, because everybody's different. The things that are, if you were depressed, well, going to be the keys that would really help you would not necessarily be the same keys for me or anybody else. So that is why there is a range of things. They all work, but the start is getting someone to do something to help themselves. that's really difficult when you're depressed to do something, to go out, get some fresh air, to go to a doctor. The thing is, you've really got to just start off nice and easy, getting yourself to do a little thing. I mean, I know the cost of power, but take a hot bath, or if cold bath is your thing, a cold one. Get a bit of fresh air. Get out of the mind rut, because when you're depressed, you're in a mind rut and you can't see your way out of the problems. Now, as we get through the book, there are lots of different strategies to actually address the problems, the things that made you depressed in the first place. I mean, I remember as a child, you know, I had big rows with my father and all sorts of things. So I left home and school at 15, quite unprepared for life. You know, so lots of upsets, lots of mistakes, and all that sort of thing. And I was quite unprepared. I was sort of relying on luck. I didn't know how to really, you know, sort myself out. But, which is why I got attracted, I think, to stress management, because I had to learn.
Yes, yeah.
To help people. And they've served me well in my lifetime and others. And many of these strategies apply when you're depressed. So you can work your way through your problems rather than just worrying about them and allowing yourself to become depressed. So that's why it's a sort of integral journey. It's actually quite fun. You know, it's a lovely, easy book to read, so people tell me.
It is. It is an easy book to read. And it's beautifully laid out or planned, because you do take people on a journey from talking about, you know, why me? Right, which is the first section of your book. And then looking at the different states of depression, different types of depression that people experience. And you do have a chart, as you say, you can tick the box saying, you know, how do you feel? What is it that you're going through? You know, how depressed are you? And then you lead from that into how you can recover from it. And then, you know, look at different forms of therapy. It's a very nicely laid out book in that sense.
Thank you for that. In beat depression, it's very important to distinguish between various stages of depression and clinical depression. Now, clinical depression, you need, difficult though it is in this day and age, to actually discuss that with a doctor, because it may be, I'm not a great lover of pills, far from it. I believe in mind strategies. But if you are really clinically depressed, you may find it difficult to even start the book. You can do the ticks and the early part, but as a safeguard to myself, apart from anything else, because I want everyone to succeed and recover from depression. But if you are so depressed, you can hardly move out of your mindset at all, then you need to be taken to your doctor, or at least have a discussion, because I can't dispense pills. I'm not clinically trained, and I wouldn't want to. 99% of beat depression is mind games we can play to get ourselves better. But clinical depression, I'm afraid you need a doctor. That's why we go into the early ticks. These are really important questions that are asked. They've been formed by organizations in America and in Britain. They are potent questions to find out what stage of depression you are at. So that's why we got to start there. And if you find, when you've answered the easy questions to answer, that you're in a state of clinical depression, then you must contact your doctor, because only then can you get the best out of the book. All other forms of depression, you don't need to. You can just work your way through the book, master the techniques. Some of them are so easy, you know, and change your state of mind. I mean, you can actually refashion your own brain. It's fascinating. Yeah. It's not rocket science. It's easy. But you've got to do it stage by stage by stage. So it's a fun book, and it does set you up for the problems we all face in life, and gives you strategies to handle it, so you're far less likely to ever become depressed again. So I think the depression, along with After Stroke, are probably the two books that I'm most proud of that I've written in my lifetime. Yeah.
And it's not just mind games, though, is it? Because it's not just a mental attitude or you know, retraining your brain. It's also, there are biological aspects to this as well. So we can talk about diet, for instance, exercise, those kind of things as well. And you do talk about those in the book.
Well, yes. There are so many factors, so many different things that can make you feel depressed, and so many things you can do and minor changes you can make in your lifestyle, and some major ones as well. Your whole life becomes more pleasant. So no matter what sort of life you have, I think it's endemic on us all. We should try and make the best that we possibly can. Let's enjoy the life that we have. And the part I think I'm most proud of, I've managed to translate, shall we say, my stress management techniques for clients that used to come with all sorts of problems of the subconscious mind into, you know, easy to follow strategies to recover from depression, in addition to the normal sort of classics. So it's actually quite a fun book, you know, and certainly if you try all the various techniques, some of them are going to work for you, not everyone, and not every single one is going to work for everybody. But they're going to more than enough to get you clear of depression. I say the one proviso, if you are clinically depressed, which is, you know, really, in that you could hardly think of anything else other than life is awful, I'm stuck, I can't solve the problem. What can I do? Nothing. Then you need the help of a doctor just to be on the safe side. But 99% of the time, you'll be able to go through the book without that.
Yeah. And you talk about also the importance of social networks. And we're not just talking about online here. We're talking about friends. We're talking about family. We're talking about people who can support. But there is an element that's come into our lives in recent years, which is the sort of, you know, social media element and the constant bombardment of advertising and all of that. And there's a lovely quote that you use. Modern man lives under the illusion that he knows what he wants, while he actually wants what he is supposed to want.
Yes. there is... I am not a great fan myself of social media at all.
Yeah.
Which is a source of great depression for a lot of people. It can do a lot of good. It can be a lot of fun. But we are living in a more depressed world than we used to before social media took a real hold. I mean, I'm lucky that if I look to my right, I have a gorgeous park, Central Park, it's gorgeous. If I look dead ahead, I've got a main road. And sometimes I look, and I mean, it's shocking. It's people now, rather than sort of walking along and talking or, you know, concentrating on what they're doing, they're on the phone. Someone was cycling on a phone. This doesn't seem right to me, but there we go.
And it can lead to issues as well, because we become divorced from, I guess, from the realities of life. And we think that we are inadequate and all those things because we're not doing what we think we're supposed to be doing. And so if you had to sum up, I guess it's almost impossible to sum up how we get through or recover from depression. But if there were, say, two or three points that you could use to sum up how we get through this, what would those be?
Well, you've got to think of yourself of what makes you happy as an individual. For instance, you spoke about social media. So many people now will have a cup of coffee, you know, in a paper cup or a plastic cup in their hand as they walk up the street.
Yeah.
Now, that can't be particularly enjoyable. You're probably going to get cold by the time they drink it. This is almost a fashion statement. You know, just try and be yourself. Do what you want to do. Don't do what you think is fashionable. Just be yourself as a free human being.
Yes.
What you want. Walk how you want. Socialize how you want. You know, meet with people that you want. Be yourself. If I had to give you one answer, there are 100 different ones, which is why it's quite a large book.
Yeah.
But be yourself. Don't be overly influenced by others.
Yeah, and talking about walking down the street holding coffee, I don't drink coffee, but I drink tea, and I would never in a million years drink tea out of a paper cup with a plastic top walking down the street. I'm sorry.
But you look around. I mean, it's because it's become the norm. That's what people do. So, I mean, this is awful the way people are having their lives refashioned by who? By who?
Yeah.
So there is a part of the book towards the end where you can refashion your own brain. Now, it sounds very grand and all that sort of thing, but it's really easy. You master the art of your own thoughts. You have the sort of thoughts that you want, not other people. And I'm not even going to attempt to try and explain that now, but this is a really important point, because you need to, you know, read every aspect of it.
Yes.
But what might seem like a very complex problem can be so easy. Once you break free from what other people expect, what other people want, what everybody else, I've got to follow them. No, you haven't. You're an individual, and you're going to do what's right for you.
Yes, that's so important. And so, David, two books, After Stroke and Beat Depression, excellent books, well worth reading if anybody is recovering from a stroke or before they have a stroke. I don't think anybody wants to anticipate having a stroke, but, you know, it's well worth reading. And Beat Depression, a really fantastically comprehensive book about how we can all recover from depression, which seems to be a bit of a scourge these days. David, where can people get a hold of those books if they want to read them?
Well, the new autumn 2022 edition, which has a British publisher, the previous edition had an American publisher, you can get anywhere. There are lots of books with the title Depression. So it's Beat Depression by David M. Hines. You can get it at any bookshop. I mean, they may not have it in stock, but you can go to order it, and that applies anywhere in the world with the new publisher. And obviously Amazon and any of the online stores. That's one of the reasons why I brought out this new edition, so that it could be freely available.
Brilliant. And David, I'm so pleased that you both recovered from your strokes, plural, because you had two, and that you have recovered from the depressions that you've suffered through your life in order to write these books, which are so important. So, and thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge and your wisdom and your humour with us today. I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much, David.
Well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure, JJ. So thank you very much indeed.
Well, talking with David certainly put some of my challenges into perspective. I love how he's turned his life and his health around. It sounds like it took some tough love and support, as well as a great deal of hard work on his part, but what a result. David's website again is davidmhines.com. That's M for mother in the middle there. You can find out all about his books and screenplay there. I'm sad to say we're coming to the end of the show now. I hope David Hines' story has inspired you as it did me. Remember, you can find the UK Health Radio podcast wherever you listen to your favourites. Just search for Alchemy 101 to find my shows. And if you like what you hear, why not check out our sister publication, Health Triangle Magazine. You'll find out how to access that at ukhealthradio.com. I hope you all have a wonderful start to 2023 and that you'll join me for a host of new shows in the new year. For now, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale. Until next time on Alchemy 101, here on UK Health Radio.